for Sam McGee. Well, then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled and the huskies howled and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks and I don't know why. And the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. And I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out and they danced about, and there again I ventured near. Well, I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, I'll just take a little peep inside. Well, I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked, and then the door I opened wide. And there sat Sam looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, please close that door. Well, it's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and the storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm. And there are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. I cremated Sam McGee. Bye bye, ho, Sam McGee.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of the podcast listeners listening to this long after the show is over. But hopefully you're live and thriving and enjoying 2013. So tonight we are going to be talking, as always, in regards to how you can better your life, especially in regards to your health, sexual health, and reproductive health. And we've got a pretty amazing guest on. We've been lucky enough to have her on the show before. She's an author of several books, and she's also an amazing educator as well. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, you may want to find out and Google Sherry Winston, because she's an incredible, amazing, amazing, amazing woman, and I'm very, very excited to have her back on the show. So, Sherry, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to be back on your show.
And I was excited when I got sent the ebook as well about holistic sexuality, because I was only familiar with your other books. And I wanted to know if you wanted to just share with our listeners just any other books I may not be aware of. And so then that way they might want to take a look and see what just some of the writing you have, as well as the amazing workshops you've got coming up.
Well, I'm actually working on a book right now, so I'll tell you about that one because I'm hoping to be done soon.
That's
I'm working
exciting.
On a book called Excellent Sexuality, A Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice, and it takes that holistic sexuality model that you were just talking about, and it expands it and then gives people lots and lots of information and practices or games or exercises or whatever you want to call them, things that you can actually do. And it's directed towards people who are solo as well as people who are partnered.
That is really, really amazing, especially just in general at any time. In regards to your books, have you found with people who are in different types of relationships, so say polyamorous, etc., have you had a lot of feedback?
I really try and have my work be accessible to everybody, whatever your lifestyle, relationship status, your orientation, your inclination, gender, whatever. So I'm always trying to present things in a way that will be accessible to everybody and anybody, no matter where you are, what you're doing, if you're doing it by yourself or you're doing it with your friends.
And for people who are planning to explore their sexuality a little bit more, any advice in terms of, because I think every day is a fresh day where they can start, but sometimes it's beautiful even though we're halfway through the month of January, hooray, and sometimes it's just kind of nice when it's the new year where it just feels like a fresh start, where you've got 365 days, maybe a little bit less than that now since we're 2 weeks in, but just to play a little bit and to try and increase, and especially taking a holistic approach to sexuality.
Well, you know, I think one thing that is really helpful is to start thinking about your sexual experiences as experiments, and that we're constantly running these little experiments in our very own laboratory of our own self. Again, with a partner or without. And if we start thinking of it that way, then you can go, well, this is what I've been doing. What would happen if I changed some little thing? What would happen if I breathed more? Or what would happen if I took longer? Or what would happen if I moved more? What would happen if I made a little ritual out of it? And then run the experiment and notice what happens. And if something good happens, practice it. Do it more. Do it again. And I think that the way that you can really expand your sexuality is by just taking those little steps one at a time. And before you know it, you know, by the end of the year, you'll have learned new things, developed new skills, explored new parts of your sexuality, and you'll have gotten to someplace interesting.
Which I think is really, really fun. And for Vancouver in particular, we've got the Taboo Naughty But Nice show coming up this weekend, which is huge, which there's lots of entertainment. There is a dungeon for those who want to explore more in terms of the Metro Kink community as well. Sin City is also doing some stuff, but as well as that, we've got all sorts of different educators. But Sherry, for our listeners that are in Vancouver, are they able to connect with you directly in regards to, because I know you've got tons of events coming up, so in case they want to leave Van City and come see you, and I think it's well worth coming to do one of your workshops, what's coming up that they might be able to participate in, or if there's any online things that they can do as well with you?
Well, there's always online things. I've got 6 recorded online classes,
Yay.
So they're accessible to anyone, anytime.
Okay.
Of course, articles and ebooks and things like that. So there's always lots of things on the website to read and look at and explore. In working with me directly, I also do consultations. So I Skype with people and do phone sessions. So singles, partners, whatever, single session series. So that's another way. And then I do have some fun things coming up.
Do tell.
I'm doing an intensive retreat called the Super Sex Makeover. I co-facilitated that with a woman named Jaya, who's a fabulous sexuality teacher.
Mm.
This is the third time we're doing it, and we have a few spots left. It actually starts on Valentine's Day.
That's a great present.
We're almost sold out here, but we do have a few spots left, and we have people literally coming from all over the world. So if people are interested, go to the website, check out the Super Sex Makeover if you want, like, a really fabulous, intense, and yet safe learning experience. It's been very transformational for people. So that's what's coming up, and a lot of energy going into getting ready for that. And then, let's see, then I'm going to be in Boston in March, and I'm really sort of planning my schedule right now, and I'll be traveling around the way I do and running around. And, you know, the bottom line is, if you want to know where I'm going to be, the easiest thing is to just get on my email list, and then you'll get a newsletter, and it'll tell you where I'm going and what I'm doing and what's coming up. And you can do that on my website.
IntimateArtsCenter.com.
And Intimate Arts is plural, and center is spelled in the United Statesian way.
I was just going to say, it's not the R-E, it's the E-R.
Right.
And I think that would be, doing the intensive with you would be an amazing thing to do for Valentine's Day. Whether you're single, whether you're in a partnership, it would be beautiful. And what does that look like for someone if that was something that they wanted to do? So they get there, and in terms of this, I've never done one myself, so I'm asking out of curiosity as well.
Well, we'd love to have you. it's a combination. We talk, there's sharing and discussion and lecture, and what we teach, we're both total anatomy geeks, so what we teach is very grounded in the body and what our actual anatomy is and how that works. And then we teach lots and lots of tools and techniques, sort of what I was talking about before, how to use your mind, how to use your body, your breath, and your sound and movement. And so we intersperse embodied activities. And as I said, everything is always done within everyone's boundaries of comfort and safety. There's no getting naked. Nobody's having sex with anybody else with the participants of the retreat. There is homework. So we do give people lots of suggestions for what they're going to go do on their free time by themselves or with their sweetie. And like I said, this is the third time we're doing it. I have to tell you, the truth is, the first time we did it, we said, oh, my gosh, this is so much work. We're never doing it again. We got such amazing responses from people about it. A little while later, we went, oh, okay, this is too good not to do it again. And then we did it a second time, and then we said, oh, gosh, this is way too much work. And, again, we just had people who, in fact, we have several people coming back this year who are repeating the retreat.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so we've just acknowledged that we're just going to probably keep doing
it.
Really, it's just really not like anything I've ever gone to, and I've gone to a lot of things because it's, I don't know, it's so integral. It's so holistic. We we're very complimentary, the two of us. We have a lot of fun together, and it's been an amazing experience to facilitate that kind of intensive transformation of people.
Have you found that since the whole 50 Shades of Grey series has come out, has it changed just some of the conversations that people, some of the questions people ask you about in regards to sex?
Well, yeah, it definitely has, and it's a fascinating phenomenon to me, I have to tell you, because who would have guessed that that's what would have broken through and that we'd be seeing, you know, a kinky romance novel, which is basically sort of what it is, you know, at airports. I mean, we were reading this, so it really has changed. Just the creating more conversation about sex itself. I don't think it's a great model of kinky play, and I don't necessarily think people should be using it as
a guidebook,
an introduction to what most people in the BDSM community are doing, because BDSM community is very much about safe, sane, and consensual play, and unfortunately in the books there's some issues around that. But it has gotten people talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it gives us some idea of what people are longing for and fantasizing about, and that's a fine thing. So I appreciate that it's stimulated so much conversation as well as other things.
No, I found it really fascinating because I know around town you'll see people reading it on the bus.
Uh-huh.
It's really, really, whereas I think probably 10 years ago even, it would be more like reading Pinto's letters somewhere in public, where
yeah,
it would be
exactly.
something.
I think 2 years ago you wouldn't have seen someone reading something so explicit in
mm-hmm.
public. I think it was a big crossover, a big shift in that people just acknowledging that they're interested in reading things that are erotic.
That's really true. And I know even Anne Rice, who wrote the Sleeping Beauty trilogy, she actually just they republished her book, and she has a little foreword in it for 2012 about the fact that she finally felt she could come out of the closet about it. Even though every time she did a book signing, people would always bring those copies and would be whispering, "We love your dirty books," whenever she'd do the signings. But she said she finally felt comfortable now that her father's passed away, etc., where she could mm-hmm. literally own it and it was okay, whereas before it was always under her pen name.
Right. Well, I think it has been a shift. And I mean, just in general, kink has been coming out of the dungeon, as it were.
I like that.
Just look at advertisements, or you'll see a billboard, and there'll be handcuffs, or
mm-hmm.
you know. So, I mean, it's really come into our culture in a way that it certainly had not been before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been very liberating for a lot of people, liberating at least in their fantasies, if not in their actions. So I'm fascinated by that.
No, it is. I'm actually really curious about how it affects, because if it starts just people evolving in their sexuality, how does it affect them in their day-to-day life as well?
Mm. And I think, it's interesting to me about the whole power play dynamic. And I'll just go sort of my own experiences of being a feminist, right, and growing up in a feminist household. And certainly 20 or 30 years ago, those kind of fantasies or that kind of play, I really looked at that as degrading to women and something a good feminist wouldn't even fantasize about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in my own mind, it was forbidden territory, what I call mind crime. For different people, we have different things that we've, grown up believing we don't do or shouldn't do, or nice people don't do, or whatever. But so for me, it was in that category, and it wasn't until I started looking at the energy of it mm-hmm. and how power play is really about exploring energetic extremes that I started to go, oh, okay, that's all right. That's okay to play with. That's okay to fantasize about. One of my models is about how in our sexual energy, most of us are stronger in one or the other polarity. You could think of it as yin-yang.
Mm.
And for a lot of women, our core sexual energy is more strongly the yin. That's the receptive energy.
Yes.
Except for the women who are wired the other way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of men, their core sexual energy is more yang, which is the more active, penetrative energy. Except for men who are wired the other way. And we tend to partner with people whose energy is the opposite of ours.
So then that will we balance
really
out?
Doesn't necessarily have to do with plumbing, right? Because same-sex couples, there's still that polarity, like magnets.
Mm-hmm.
And so power play is really about going deeply into one of the extremes. One partner going deeply into the receptive, surrendering yin energy, and the other partner going deeply into their doing active, penetrating energy. And what's fascinating to me about the 50 Shades of Grey is I think that that's really speaking to that,
mm-hmm.
And that's why so many women are turned on by it.
That makes sense. I always think of it as the whole caveman thing, where it's just like you, and just like that just beautiful sense of control in some way. Mm-hmm. Which can be really neat. And I can see that in terms of the raging yang versus the yin, depending on the depending on who it is.
Right. And of course, when you're in a relationship with a partner that's based on trust, where you're playing with that, then it's okay, as opposed to the actual, sort of rapist energy.
Yes.
I mean, rapist energy is about dominating without concern or regard, right? But extreme yang, dominating in a mastery way, is about ultimately taking your partner out farther than your partner could go on their own, right?
Hmm.
And I think certainly a lot of people, women perhaps in particular, long for that, to be able to surrender to someone who can give them more pleasure, take them farther out in their ecstasy than they've ever allowed themselves to go before.
That's true, because in that way it's pushing the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very much so. In terms of for sexuality, so say someone comes, they take a workshop, and obviously the fact that people are coming back and like again and just want to, so it's becoming almost like these wonderful retreats. I think it's awesome. What are some of the feedback, how it's affected their relationships and their lives in general?
Oh, yeah, I can tell you the first time we did it on Sunday morning, mm-hmm. so we have been all day Friday, all day Saturday, and into the evening. It's pretty intense. And Sunday morning, we give people a little free time, and then we come back together, and we're having a circle. And there's a couple there who had arrived clearly in difficulty, if not crisis.
Mm.
And Sunday morning, they get into the circle, and we're doing some sharing, and they're illuminated. She looks so beautiful. He looks so happy. And she shares that they've had this really amazing breakthrough in their relationship, and that she had her first orgasm ever.
Ever?
Ever. That morning during their play and free time.
Mm.
And just looked like an angel. I mean, she was just like glowing.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is the stuff that makes me, this is why I say I'm a transformation junkie. Right? This is why I do what I do, because I just love to see people get lit up by that and start to be able to access their pleasure and their orgasms and their ecstasy and connect with themselves that way and connect with their partner that way if they're partnered. So that's the kind of experiences that made us say, yeah, we got to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's fantastic. Over the years that you've been doing the education, how have you evolved yourself just based on as you've done more and more? How has it changed you in your own sexuality?
Well, at this point, my curriculum has like over 50 different classes.
Wow.
And, yeah, I know.
That's a lot.
It just keeps adding, It just is like, oh, I need to teach about that, or oh, I need to teach about that. And I think part of what happens is, of course, we teach about what it is we want to learn about or we're in the process of learning about. You probably don't know. My background is I'm a certified nurse midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, massage therapist, childbirth educator, and I did that work for like 20 years.
Wow.
And so during that time, I was teaching about childbirth and breastfeeding and infant massage and that sort of thing. And then I shifted or transitioned. I like to think of it as deeper in to the same mystery, really, deeper into that process. And so when I started teaching, I just started teaching a class for women about having better orgasms, And then I started teaching a class for men about female sexuality and then a class for everyone about how to have better orgasms. And all of this is always sort of motivating me. I studied lots of different sacred sexuality disciplines. So it's always kind of, what else can I learn?
Hmm.
What else is there? And as far as I can tell, there's just more. There's always more. More to learn, more to explore. I'm just always excited to find that there's more ways to get pleasure and more ways to connect and more fun things to do. So I'm just, I think I'm also a learning junkie, really.
I think that's a good thing, though, for for someone who is doing education, especially 50 courses. I think that's fantastic.
You know, I'm just trying to stop. I mean, I'm trying not to do more different things, but it just keeps expanding. I also do professional trainings, too.
Mm-hmm.
I teach like a client empowering gynecology program for gynecologists and midwives and nurse practitioners and stuff like that. So, there just keeps being more. But there's always more to learn. I mean, I just think we're on a learning journey, and that if when I stop learning, when I stop.
In terms of sexuality, what do you think we need to do as a planet, basically, to just heal? Because there's so much sexual abuse, etc. And what I love about the work you do is you bring so much joy and encourage people to play.
Mm. Well, I think the shift in sexuality is part of the shift in consciousness that needs to happen. Everybody just, you know, get that we're connected. Not just the humans, but all life on the planet. All we're connected to the rocks. I mean, that nothing is separate. And when I talk about holistic, I mean holistic in the sense of mind, body, heart, and spirit, and holistic in myself, but I also really mean it on a community level, on a cultural level, and on a planetary level. And so to me, until we really heal sexuality, we're still going to be plagued with violence and evil, because I actually think our sexuality is the expression of our life force.
Mm-hmm.
And that life force will get expressed one way or another, and we can express it in pleasure and connection and love and orgasms.
Hmm.
Or if it gets twisted and distorted and repressed, then I think it comes out as violence. And so even as we're having these conversations in my benighted country about, you know, guns and gun violence and all this horrible stuff, I think it's part of that. I think that people who do violent acts, people who go torture people, then don't go home and have a wonderful, connected, loving sexual relationship with their partner. You know, those two things don't really exist in one person.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think this is part of the whole shift in consciousness that we hopefully will have, because otherwise we're going to be taking the whole thing out in a big, big ugly mess, you know?
Very much so. And for people who do take that step where it is doing the healing, it's embracing the joy. And one of the things I love that you said earlier was talking about that wonderful exchange of energy and just that wonderful flow to relationships, to sexuality, etc., especially when you connect with another being. And if people are doing their homework, I love the fact that you give people homework during a retreat. It's awesome. But taking that out into the world, and in terms of a massive global shift, my gut just tells me that's part of the key to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because, like I said, I spent 20 years really in the world of birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I started when I was 20. And you know how when you're 20, you think, I was such an optimist. I really thought that in 10 years it would be so much better, and in 20 years it would be great.
Mm.
And then there I was 20 years later, and in many ways it was worse. There was more medicated birth, less home birth, less midwives. I mean, it was just, I didn't see it getting better. I saw it getting worse. And part of what I realized as I started working on sexuality is, until we heal sexuality, which is the root, we're not going to heal birth, we're not going to heal gender relationships, we're not going to heal violence. So to me, this is core root stuff that everyone has potential to access inside them. Everyone has this ability. So I'm just so really dedicated to trying to be part of helping that cultural transformation happen. You know, one person at a time, one orgasm at a time, whatever.
And I think in terms of culturally, do you find it's different sometimes just based on people's culture and belief system sometimes if they're coming to a workshop, et cetera, where sometimes there's different types of things to break down before they can just let the energy flow?
Absolutely. You know, we all have our own unique relationship with ourselves, our own sexuality, our own history. So everyone, in a way, has their own path.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a Ask the Sex Teacher Anything webinar tonight.
Oh.
You're right. And there were a number of questions from a number of people about breaking through inhibitions or recovering from their religious upbringing and that sort of thing. So everyone's got their own inhibitions, blocks, barriers, things they have to work through. Everyone's also got their own strengths, you know, their own gifts and their places where their things are easy for them. And so I'm a big fan of start with what's easy for you and then take little steps. You know, recognize what it is you want to work through or shift or change, and then take a little step and then another little step, and start with what's easy and start with what resonates. And before you know it, things will have shifted.
Which, okay. I think, going full circle, that's perfect for even starting off for the year. Small steps is key, because if you do a little bit at a time, the evolution shifts.
Right, exactly. Exactly right. You know, before we got on the air, you were asking about New Year's resolutions, and I was acknowledging that resolutions, right. But I was realizing that I sort of have an ongoing resolution, which is about creating more balance in my life.
Mm.
You know, here I am, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, I run, you know, crazy kind of a business that I've created teaching people about sex, of all things, right? And it's really, in a lot of ways, I mean, I used to think I was a responsibility, crazed person when I was a midwife. But as an entrepreneur, even more so. So, you know, one of the things I did for myself was I put on my schedule. Well, I'm also trying to get this book written, so I put, you know, my book writing on my schedule. And about half the time I actually do the book writing, but I also schedule in like days off now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because otherwise, as an entrepreneur, you never ever have a day off, right? Because there's always work to do. So I now actually schedule, and I write it, put it in there, day off.
And I think that's key, because I mean, we could be working like till 3 a.m. otherwise sometimes.
Uh huh. And I don't always manage the day off, but at least I put it in my schedule, and at least about half the time I do.
And the intention is there to follow it. So,
right. And I think we also have to be gentle with ourselves.
Mm.
You know, it's easy to, you know, then be unhappy with ourselves because we're not doing everything we should. But we need to go, okay, hey, I've gotten to working on the book half the days I said I would. And most of the time when I have my day off, I take at least part of the day off. So instead of being like kicking ourselves for like not being good enough, I can go, hey, I'm doing really well.
In terms of the book, tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, I wanted, honestly, I was trying to write a shorter, less dense, less intense book.
Mm.
I think I'm capable of that. I'd envisioned it as really a practice guide that had lots of games and exercises and practices so that people could really explore and experiment on their own or with a partner. And so a lot of the things I've been using in classes and for all these years are there. But then I've found that I just keep wanting to give people more information also.
Mm.
I talk about the mind and the body and and the heart and the spirit, and then all the tools that those aspects of ourselves provide. And then I give lots and lots of serving suggestions, because I don't believe in telling anybody what to do.
But I love the word serving suggestions, and I was about to ask, what is that?
Well, you know, like when you see like a frozen food package or something of like waffles, and they're like covered with strawberries and whipped cream, and then it's a serving suggestion, because like the waffles are in the package, but there's not really any whipped cream or strawberries. it's an idea of what you could do with the waffles. And you don't have to add strawberries and whipped cream. You could have maple syrup and nuts. It doesn't matter. But the idea is, like, here's the waffle, and here's some things you can do with it. And now do what seems like it'll be fun for you.
Mm-hmm.
I like to give lots of leeway and suggestions, right? They're ideas for experiments that people can run, you know? And that way people can find the path that works for them.
Has there ever been anything where someone's asked you a sex question where it's been one of those, because from what I know of you, and I've only had the privilege of chatting to you a couple times on the show once before and tonight, have you ever had anybody ask any questions where you're like, whoa, just like where it's a complete misconception about sex?
Oh, yeah. a lot. I mean, I think we have enormous misconceptions about sex in our culture.
Mm.
So there are ones that are very overt, certainly, but then there are a lot of subtle misconceptions. I mean, for example, a lot of people just seem to be focused on intercourse as what sex is.
Mm.
Right? And so they might be asking questions about, well, you know, my male partner, you know, his erection waxes and wanes, and it's like, yeah, and that's fine. They can do that, right? But they're like, well, you know, he has to be hard so we can have intercourse. And it's like, well, yeah, and there's so many fun things to do that aren't intercourse, And if there's an erection issue, there's lots of things you can do about that.
Hmm.
And it's an opportunity to explore all of the wonderful ways to make love with a partner without an erection. And so I think we get very caught up in our culture about things like orgasm is another example. You know, that sex is really about orgasm.
Or that's almost the benchmark where if you don't achieve it, yeah, kind of do or die.
Yeah. And then people get so fixated on that they're not enjoying the pleasure of all the arousal. And then they get anxious, and then they get performance anxiety and all of the things that are really the enemy of pleasure. So there's those kinds of confusions, I think, or cultural misconceptions about what we're doing, why we're doing it, what we should be doing. Porn, oh my gosh, porn has created so many people with such bad technique, and they don't understand why they're doing what they see in the porn, and it's not working the way it does in the porn video. You know, well, that's because it's not real. that's entertainment. That's not education. And so they're getting trained. They're getting imprinted even. And then the plumber doesn't show up at the door, and they're not boffing on the living room floor 2 minutes later and having screaming orgasms. And what's wrong? It's like, well, that's because that's not real. So I mean, there's so many. I mean, I could go on. But the fact is that I think the biggest one, actually, is that people don't understand that sex is something we learn, as opposed to something that just is. Because part of it is nature. Part of it is, you know, ancient animal template. But for us humans, much of our sexuality is learned, including what turns us on, how we get turned on, what kinds of activities we do, what's possible, where we can go, all of those things are all learnable.
Mm-hmm.
You could learn to play the piano, or I could learn to speak French. And sex is just like that. And that might be the biggest misconception, this idea that if a woman doesn't have orgasms or doesn't have them easily, she might think there's something wrong with her, that she's somehow, you know, broken or defective, instead of thinking, oh, I just haven't learned how to do that yet.
Hmm. So is it possible for, and maybe this sounds really silly coming from me because I should know this, but can all women learn how to have an orgasm?
Yeah, they can.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people that are paraplegic and quadriplegic can learn to have orgasms.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. They can re-pattern. You know how if somebody has a stroke and, like, lose the ability to, you know, maybe speak or something, how they can relearn and another part of their brain takes over?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So people who have spinal cord damage can actually relearn to have orgasms using pathways of getting their mouth stimulated, or if they have sensation in their hands stimulated. So if you think, well, if people in that condition can learn to have orgasms, of course everyone can learn.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic, because I was also going to ask in regards to trans M to F or F to M, in regards to depending where they are in their transition as they start to adjust with the changes, especially after surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes with hormonal, just in terms of what they're taking. So that I'm going to ask it anyway, but would that be the same similar circumstance where they could learn as well?
Absolutely. And, okay. You know, the thing with the surgeries is there's many different procedures that are done. And, of course, every body is unique anyway. So what's going to happen to the nerve pathways? What's going to happen with scar tissue? What's going to get moved where is going to be somewhat variable. Mm-hmm. But whatever you've got, and this also goes for people with all kinds of disabilities, whatever you've got, you can learn how to use it to the best of its ability.
Mm-hmm.
And since really most of actually what happens with sex is going on in our brains, we think it's going on in our genitals, but really that information goes up into our brain and then stuff happens in our brain. So whatever's there, whatever state it's in, you can learn how to maximize the pleasure you can get from your genitals, as well as really learning to turn on other parts of your body. I mean, people can learn to have orgasms from nipple stimulation. Everybody has nipples.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's really true.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What have you learned throughout, because you've obviously learned a lot and you continue to add, what's maybe the top three things that you've learned that surprised you at the time?
Well, I'll tell you what, that thing I just said about paraplegics and quadriplegics learning to have orgasms, when I first read about that and heard about that and then actually talked to somebody who's in that condition, that really blew me away. That's sort of at the top of my brain right at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first learned that actually men could learn to have multiple orgasms, learn to have non-ejaculatory orgasms. When I first learned that, that was some time ago, I was kind of like, oh, I didn't know. And I think a lot of people don't know that for men, orgasm and ejaculation are actually two separate processes.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with that, did you want to share a little bit about that?
Well, so most men experience orgasm and ejaculation as if it was one bodily process, but there's actually two different things going on. And the analogy I use is like driving a stick shift. Because, once you learn and you do it, you don't know what you're doing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, I just got rid of my old stick shift car, and I now have a car that doesn't have a stick shift. And, you know, sometimes, even though I've had the car for about 2 months now, sometimes when I'm coming to a stop sign, my hand still, like, goes out for the stick, or my foot moves for the clutch that's not there. because I just, like, was so trained to do that for so many years.
Mm.
Men can actually learn to separate those processes and have non-ejaculatory orgasms, and then men can learn to have full body orgasms and multiple orgasms, just like women can learn. So
that makes it so much more fun.
I thought that was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such an anatomy geek that for me, a lot of this comes back to sort of the body. But I guess really the biggest thing, and this is sort of my Women's Anatomy of Arousal book kind of central thing, is, you know, in order to get all those degrees that I had when I was a healthcare professional, I went to school a lot and I studied anatomy a lot, particularly with emphasis on female anatomy and reproductive organs. And I was really astounded a number of years after I was done with school to discover that women actually have just as much erectile tissue as men do, and that a number of those structures were completely left out of my education, aren't in the textbooks, and still are not in most books about sex or anatomy. So that's actually what, you know, stimulated that book to be written, because if we don't know what we have and our partners don't know what we have and we don't know how it operates and how to make it happy and how to use that whole network of equipment, that really limits the amount of pleasure we can have. So that learning created a number of classes and a book.
And when people read the book, what is some of the feedback you get? Because I mean, it's an award-winning book. You've done so well, but from individuals, what are some of the things you hear?
Okay, well, I'm going to type an email that made me cry.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay. So I get email from this woman, and she describes she's been sexually active for 13 years. She'd never had penetration, intercourse of any kind that wasn't painful. Even having a pelvic exam, a speculum exam, was terribly painful for her. She'd been to a number of doctors. She was told she had various conditions. And she read my book, and she got that idea that women have this whole interconnected network of erectile structures, and that for a lot of women, for us to really enjoy any kind of penetration, it's good when all of those structures have gotten engorged, because we can get aroused and orgasmic with just part of the network activated, which for most of us is stimulation to the head of the clitoris, because that's the part we know about, and that is kind of the jewel of the whole system. But so she read the book, and her partner read it with her, and they stimulated her whole network. They got the whole thing juicy and engorged, and she had intercourse that was not only pleasurable but was orgasmic. And and she was just, you know, thanking me quite effusively. She had been there was some sort of surgery or something that she was considering having, and she now realized that all of this had just been because she had been trying to have intercourse when she wasn't aroused enough, when she didn't have the whole cuff of erectile tissue nice and engorged, and that was the problem. So, yeah, that was that like that. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
It is. It really is. I mean, this is. I'm like a missionary on this stuff, right?
I just want it's beautiful.
Every woman and every man who partners with women to know what's there and this information. And I want all the healthcare professionals to know this, because there's a lot of really bad advice given to women in regards to their genitals.
What are some of the worst things you've heard in terms of bad advice that you've heard from physicians or healthcare professionals?
Oh, there's unfortunately so much. Well, female ejaculation is now certainly a more acknowledged and accepted somewhat understood thing. I mean, I don't think a lot of people totally understand it, but at least most people kind of believe it exists. But there's still women, even now, who might have that experience, not know what it is, go to their health care provider. And certainly in the years when I was doing clinical practice, I had women who had surgery to correct what they were told was incontinence. They were told they were peeing.
Wow.
They had surgery, which often created other problems, scar tissue, pain, nerve damage, things like that, for something that was a completely natural and pleasurable and healthy function. So that's kind of brutal.
That's shocking and actually kind of sick.
Yeah, there's so much way more. Hysterectomy, I mean, we've just got, you're not as bad in Canada as we are in the States, but you're not fabulous about this either.
No.
But a lot of women get their uteruses removed for reasons that really don't merit it. The U.S. has the highest rate of hysterectomy in the world.
Wow.
And having a hysterectomy causes all kinds of other problems. And, so not understanding what the uterus is, not understanding that the uterus is actually a player in sexual arousal and orgasm, and that having it removed, besides all the other problems that it causes, also impacts women's sexual pleasure. And that's some information I'd really like everyone to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In regards to sexual pleasure, one of the things that, and sometimes I blame pornography for it, whether that's right or wrong, but just the amount of labiaplasty, the bleaching, etc., how does that affect our sexuality?
Well, I find it disturbing, I just really have to say, and because so many women just feel like their genitals are not normal, and that's why they're having these procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Their genitals are normal. There's no reason to have those procedures. It's just crazy to me, actually. But what's getting cut off is sensitive tissue full of wonderful nerve endings, part of their erotic equipment. It's almost as if it's like voluntary genital mutilation. There can be scar tissue. There can be nerve damage. Obviously, there can be infection and those sorts of problems. So I'm so saddened that women feel so bad about their genitals, and they feel like there's something wrong with them, and they don't understand how enormous the range of normal is. You know, when I first started taking care of women, I had a wonderful midwife that I had trained with, and she taught me way back then to give what she called, and I still call it, empowering pelvic exam. And in fact, I teach that. And one of the great things she taught me to do was to reassure women about how normal everything was as I was doing their exams. So this was just part of what I did. But it's really funny because in the first, like, 3 years I was practicing, I would be giving a genital exam, and I would be, my outside voice would be going, this is really normal, this is perfect, this is normal, this is exactly normal. And my inside voice would be going, wow, look at this one. I didn't know they could look like that. That's so cool. Look how big. Look how small. Look at the color. Look at where it is. I mean, so my inside voice, I was like, wow, wow, wow. And my outside voice, I was like, this is just normal. This is perfect. Because I didn't know what the range of normal was. You know, now, of course, I've seen thousands of crotches, and I can see normal is vast. Normal is huge. Yeah, I'm very disturbed by the plastic surgery surgery thing.
How?
And that's the external stuff. There's also the internal stuff where they're doing vaginal rejuvenation and tightening vaginas and things like that.
Even Avendis, there's time to monologue on that one.
Yeah, that's all the same problems
with
scar tissue and nerve damage and possible infection and discomfort or even pain with penetration. And the truth is, everything that they're talking about the surgery doing, you can do just by getting in touch with your body and learning how to use it.
Wow. So what are some things that healthcare practitioners can do? Because obviously they should be taking your workshop in terms of, because I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'm actually just thinking one of the guests I've had on the show is actually through BC Cancer, something called the LACE campaign, where they... basically, it's a sexy campaign to encourage women to get their pap tests. In Canada, they encourage once every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that concept because my gut tells me there's probably a lot of people that, like some that the physicians that actually participate in that in the clinics that would probably be really interested in what you do. And I think that's awesome. But how do we spread the word about that more? Them to take your course, find out more.
I've had people who've given my book to their gynecologist.
Okay.
Oh, and I've had, yeah, I don't know. When I first started teaching this stuff, I sent proposals to medical schools and you know, conferences for gynecologists and places like that, because I really wanted to get this information in the hands of the professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one turned them down.
Wow.
It's interesting because, you know, I presented a lot of conferences about sexuality and I never get turned down. but when I was trying to, you know, or approaching medical schools, so when I tried that approach early on, it went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so at a certain point I said, okay, I have to get this information in the hands of sexuality professionals and the public.
Yes.
And then ultimately they're going to be the ones who go to their healthcare providers and say, hey, you know, you need to know this.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why I sort of go with, like, well, you know, give them a copy of the book, turn them onto the online class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and ultimately, I do hope to be able to do professional training. I mean, it's interesting because most of the professional trainings I do tend to be for, you know, midwives or nurse practitioners or
physicians.
Organizations like Planned Parenthood, you know, mm-hmm. places that are much more open to giving really woman-centered care and empowering care. So I think it's a great idea to... in general, to go to those kind of care providers. They tend to spend more time and explain things and educate better and be more holistic anyway. I don't know. Keep working at it, I guess.
No, I think it's key. And in regards to where else can they see, because you were saying that, because I'm just envisioning being a medical student, like, in regards to having such a wonderful array of just what women look like in terms of her genitals and just the education piece on that as well, where people can see, because other than the only things I can think of in terms of resources is there's the book and documentary Petals by Nick Karras. But other mm-hmm. than that, if there's any other resources that you think might be stuff that people should be adding to their library, especially if they're in med school or if they're doing women-centered care in general, and even as lovers of women that people should be taking a look at. And so just that way they can create safe, wonderful spaces to play.
Well, there's a number of books. There's a wonderful book by Joni Blank called Femalia, which are just color photographs, close-up color photographs of female genitalia.
Mm.
And I had actually gotten an extra copy of that, cut it up, and made posters, and I used to have them in my office. So women would walk in, instead of seeing a diagram of what I used to call, like, the standard white vulva, right? This sort of generalized ideal vulva. They would see these posters that had, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred extremely diverse vulvas that they could see. So that would give them a sense. So things like that. There are a couple other books out there that are sort of that same idea of images. They're not easy to find, but yeah, there's that's another book I would recommend. The Familia is one. There's a couple others out there. My brain is not coming up with the titles. It's 2 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast.
I was just gonna say I give you kudos for being up this late as well, and I want to say huge thank you for being on this edition of Sexy in Van City Radio. And just to plug in terms of, just because you're an amazing guest, you have so much to share. And if someone wants to share with their healthcare professional or their partner in regards to just about your workshops, etc., if you want to share your website as well one more time.
I'd be happy to. So that's intimatearts.center.com. Intimate, arts is plural, ARTS, and center is CENTER.com. People can also find me if they look for my name, which is Sherry Winston, but you have to spell Sherry correctly. It's Sheri. And either one of those things will get you to my website. And then once you're on my website, there's just vast resources there to explore and read and check out.
Well, that sounds perfect. Sherry, thank you so much for being on the show.
It is such a pleasure. I really enjoy talking to you, and we get into great conversations, so I'm always happy to do it, even if it is the middle of the night.
Even if it's very late.
I'm a night owl, so it's not so bad for me. I'm not one of those early morning people.